Hi, and welcome to the Yes Live Show on UK Health Radio, the show that's entirely devoted to integrative medicine for cancer, or integrative oncology as it's correctly called. My name's Robin Daly, and I'm the founder of the UK charity that the show is named after, Yes to Life. I set up Yes to Life 15 years ago to help people with cancer find out about the many complementary and lifestyle approaches that are available to help improve their outcomes and their quality of life. Integrative medicine is the combining of mainstream approaches with these other therapies as a means to improve the treatment of cancer. My guest this week on the show is returning for a second discussion. Dr. Q Collins has for many years focused on the role of deuterium in overall health and particularly in relation to cancer. The understandings he's gained from this work lead him to have some constructive insights into the current coronavirus epidemic, and so I thought it would be interesting to hear what he has to say on the subject. I'm talking to Dr. Q in Los Angeles over Skype. Good morning, Dr. Q. Thanks so much for making the early start. It's great to talk to you again.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you very much, Robin, for inviting me back.
Okay, so listeners have our last interview to go back to if they want to get more detail on deuterium and deuterium depletion. And I will explain at the end of the show how to find that other show. But could you start out with a brief recap, just explaining what deuterium is and why it matters how much we have in our systems?
All right. Deuterium is the fat cousin of hydrogen. And as everybody knows, hydrogen is that element that combines oxygen to make water, so H2O. And when deuterium, since it's twice as heavy as hydrogen, it's called an isotope. You know, so I only get geeky with people, but it's called an isotope. But again, think of it as your fat cousin. When it binds with oxygen to make water, that's called heavy water. You know, you've all heard of heavy water when you think about bombs and things, yeah, like atomic bombs. And that really is the same thing. It's heavy water. And our body, and that is inside our body. It's not that it's radioactive, it's just heavier. Then you have regular water, which we like to call light water. And again, you've heard about that when you think about bombs. So inside of our body, we know that we're 66% water, just like Earth, and just like anything, you know, just like everything else on Earth. And being 66% water, the way we make energy is almost exactly the same way that a water turbine works, right? Where water flows past those engines, and as they flow past those engines, you make energy, and that energy is called ATP. And the faster the water flows past, the more energy you make. Now, when it's heavy water, what happens is it hits that engine and it breaks that engine. And therefore, as it breaks that engine, which is called a nanomotor, when it breaks that engine, you're no longer able to make energy. When you're no longer able to make energy or as much energy, then you start to have fatigue, you start to have obesity, diabetes, and ultimately, as you break more and more of these engines inside your body in a place called the mitochondria, then that gives rise to a lot of other more serious diseases like cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's, and ultimately, which I find to be the worst, cancer. And you get cancer, when you look at cancer cells, the great majority of them have less mitochondria, less engines in them to make energy than do normal cells. And since they have less engines that get knocked out by this deuterium, then they have to use different types of fuels to power themselves. And that different type of fuel happens to be carbohydrates and sugars. Cancer cells, for the most part, cannot use proteins and fats as a source of food. It uses sugars. And so as one of the first things you can do to reverse the foundations of what gives rise to cancer or diabetes or all of these things that we talk about being metabolic disorders is to lower your deuterium levels. And by doing that, then you're able to have more energy and also able now to repair or replace, I should say, those engines that have been destroyed before you got the disease.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, you're grouping these diseases together and you're saying they are diseases of energy, of low energy or energy problems.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Rob, because that's why they call them metabolic disorders versus being called a genetic disorder. If it's a genetic disorder, we make reference to that being a problem of your DNA. When it's a metabolic disorder, it's a problem of the way your body uses food and makes energy. And those diseases like cancer, diabetes, all these things now, although we thought for years that they were genetic disorders, we now understand that they're not, but they're actually metabolic disorders. And the things that we thought we were seeing on the DNA side, it's not that the DNA was causing the disease itself, although there are some genetic disorders that give rise to disease. But for the most part, it was a metabolism and having metabolism that gets screwed up that goes back and feeds in on your DNA instead. So it's the metabolism that's making the DNA the way it is and not the DNA that's making the metabolism the way it is.
Mm, this is one of those chicken and egg situations. It has to be said, mind you, that of course the conventional view still is that it's a genetic disease.
This has changed over quite a bit already, and it will become part of, in medicine itself, we now are having that very great discussion, but consensus is now within science and medicine is that it is metabolic. However, it probably won't become part of the scientific lore or what's into the community. Probably it usually takes about 5 years for the new understanding to really become part of our lexicon and part of our everyday understanding. So you're right. The chicken and egg, now it's going to be, and I want to say, for me, I would also like to say that I don't really care if it's the chicken or the egg, because at the end of the day, you just want to know how to fry that thing.
Right.
And that's it.
Right. Oh, well, fair enough. And I think it's a very interesting situation because it's not like either side of the argument that's going on disagrees that the other side, it doesn't exist, isn't there at all. Both the genetic lobby will tell you, oh, yes, of course, there is a metabolic problem. And the metabolic side will also say, yes, there are genetic problems, but it's both of them are describing the other one's problems as being a symptom rather than a cause.
So true.
Yeah.
I think that's so interesting. And one of the things you must understand that we're really, which is relatively new research in the last 3 or 4 years, is that even the DNA is bathed in water, is bathed in water. We'll make that connection to how all these things are important when we start talking about water itself.
Right. Okay. So look, I want to ask you something now about, it's a bit of a tangent now, but about the current pandemic. So I understand you suggest that deuterium depletion as a strategy could help with building resilience in the face of a new virus, such as the one we're dealing with now, which should make it of general interest to a lot of people, but possibly particularly so to people with cancer.
Yes. Well, thank you for that. Yes, the reason is, so deuterium, your body does a variety of things. Quite frankly, it is deuterium it is so important. If you think of those hydrogens, the hydrogens are the things in your body that hold things together. It's the thing that makes, that the size of how a protein works or how your muscles work. Think of it as like a Lego or a erector set, to where you have little nuts that go on screws, and that when you connect those screws and nuts, and your erector set says it's supposed to be a house. So it builds a perfectly beautiful house with all the right nuts and screws. When you replace that small screw, hydrogen, with a big screw, deuterium, then what you get that house doesn't look the same anymore. It's kind of, you know, it may start to look, instead of a house, it looks like a car. And that's really the way it works in your body. So the more deuterium you make, the more your enzymes start to look differently. And if they get so different, then they no longer work, or they don't work the same. Now, when we talk about COVID, so your body, because of this, your body has a lot of different mechanisms to try to get rid of deuterium. And those mechanisms are pretty much the ones that if you sit down and think about it, you probably could figure them out. It's really, you urinate this stuff out because it's all water. Think it's water, folks, mm-hmm. Water. So you're going to urinate it out, you poop it out, you breathe it out, you sweat it out. You do all these things to get rid of it. That is all about that. But all those things take energy. So in COVID, what are we seeing? The COVID attacks what's called the ACE2 receptor. And an ACE2 receptor, it's just a receptor that happens to be on lungs, but it's also on a lot of other tissues. It's on brain tissue and eye tissue, gastrointestinal tract. It's on the liver and gallbladder. It's on the kidneys. It's on the pancreas. It's on male sex tissues, but not on female tissues. So these are very important. And you might ask why. These all have to do with something that's called the renin-angiotensin system, which is that thing that determines your blood pressure, right? It's blood pressure. Mm. And if you think of yourself as a big tube, the amount of water, the pressure is caused by the amount of water that's in your body, right? And so your system, that renin-angiotensin system, is a way to control what the pressure of that water is inside your body. That's what it's for. Now, make the next jump. If you have heavy water, then the mechanisms by which, or the way it's going to try to get rid of that water, it may take more pressure to get rid of heavy water than it does to get rid of light water. Of course, if you try to get rid of something and it's heavier, you're going to need more force. Mm-hmm. Therefore, but that's the way your body's working. It's constantly in your gut. The most amazing thing, Robin, is if you look at all of these things on where we see, where the ACE2 receptors are, they're in all the places that are important for deuterium removal. So the gut, the gastrointestinal tract is your number one way that you get rid of deuterium. How? You eat your foods are digested, and then it goes into your bowels. And inside your bowels, there are bacteria. That's what your gut's made of. Literally, billions of bacteria inside your gut. And those bacteria eat up deuterium, and they go inside the bacteria. And deuterium is something that makes things grow, just like cancer cells, or infants, or bacteria, or trees. It's to make things grow fast. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that later, why. And so that's why you get bloated, you get all these things in your gut, and then you poop it out. You're pooping out the deuterium. Therefore, in the same way with your liver and your kidney, it's taking in that deuterium and getting rid of it. That's why when we talk about detoxification is really just a synonym, a word for getting rid of deuterium, because once you get rid of the deuterium, then you can get rid of metals and you can get rid of all these other things that these detox things are trying to do. So what is the connection? Very, very easy. If you don't have ACE2 receptors, then your ability to control your blood pressure, to get rid of deuterium, goes away. As that goes away, now your deuterium levels are there to hit all those nanomotors, all those engines in all your cells to get rid of your energy. And when we talk about COVID, we know that that gives rise to respiratory distress. And really, the last thing that happens to you before you die, and it's called getting tired. Think about that. It's called exactly what we're talking about. You simply tire, they say you tire out. Mm-hmm. That means you have absolutely not enough energy for your to make enough energy to control the flow of water in your body. And it starts to go to all the wrong places. And it happens to be heavy, heavy, heavy water. And every time that water goes someplace, it destroys it. Think about any, if you think about a river or anything, if you can control, if you, rivers, lakes, those things are beautiful when they're going the right directions. When they start to flood, they cause a lot of destruction, mayhem, and death. And this is what we're seeing in the coronavirus. And it's very important to cancer patients. And we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later. But it's very important to cancer patients and other people that have metabolic disorders. What's fortunate is that we at the Center for Deuterium Depletion have been studying this for years, not because of the coronavirus, but we've been studying because we understand this as a way to get rid of deuterium. And so we've known about this for a long time, and that's the reason that we're doing so many different things, submitting so many different things to the government, at least the U.S. government, about ways to battle this.
Mm. Right. Okay. Can I just backtrack on a couple of the things you said, though, interesting amongst that? You talked to one thing you mentioned, the difference between men and women. And that's something that's come up in the news quite a bit, is that it genuinely seems to be the case. This is not man flu, like they talk about, but actually men do get this worse than women. And I think maybe you've explained why.
Yes, it's because we have more ACE2, receptors. And anytime you, the catch is, the COVID virus connects to these ACE2 receptors. And when it connects to those ACE2 receptors, along with high levels of deuterium, it down-regulates. In other words, it puts less, it makes less receptors on the membranes of all these places. So, and for us, for males, it is more, it seems to be more important, especially for our male tissues. So people that have prostate cancer, and that's why we get a lot more pancreatic cancers in women, is what we're seeing now. It seems to be more important because it is our blood pressure system and our meningoangiotensin system works differently in males and females. And we know this is true because that's the reason that you even, the meningoangiotensin system is something that develops in younger kids. And we know it develops much later. It takes a much longer time to develop that to maturity in a male, which is why you see more males, children, bedwetting to the age of 12, 13 until they get into puberty, just, you know, a couple of years before puberty, then you see, seeing a bedwetting female is very, very, it's rare compared to male, to men. And that's only, it's not a psychology thing, it's not a bad thing happen that you see on these television shows. It really just has to do with the maturation and of the meningiotensin, angiotensin system, the blood pressure system in males. And so if it's so important when we're early development, it makes totally sense that it's totally important and can be hit by, taken advantage of by COVID now. It's just that now that we have this, the COVID pandemic, it's just happenstance.
Mm. Interesting. Okay. Another thing I wanted to ask you about is you talked about when you're talking about clearing the body of deuterium, you talked about doing that first before detoxing from metals, etc. Why is it first?
So the reason being is that you want to, instead of paying whack-a-mole, what I mean by whack-a-mole is that you're treating a symptom. So yes, you can detox using supplements and these things to get rid of metals, right. But it's going to come back. That's the reason you do a yearly detox or every 6-month detox, because you haven't fixed the problem. Instead, what you can do, and there's nothing wrong with detoxing, but what you can do is to lower your deuterium levels, and now your liver and kidney and detox mechanisms will be able to do that on their own. So we have plenty of patients that have they have never been able to get rid of metals or worms or parasites, and were able to lower their deuterium levels. That organ or that system of organs now has the ability to make more energy, and it does what God made it to do, right. Made it for, and that's to get rid of stuff, to clear it, to process enzymes better. And so that's why I say, by lowering your deuterium levels, it's not that you go for one system, but you're really making the body the way the body's supposed to work. And when we say this because we return us to deuterium levels that we had before modern industry, or really before we became modern man and destroyed a lot of the things that were needed for us to deplete deuterium. Eating right, sleeping right, being under less different kind of stresses at least, and also even where we live, being outside more. All those things that modernity, the advantages of modernity, they have destroyed.
Mm. All right, okay, I can make sense of that. So it's actually you're talking about fixing the normal system for doing the job. Hence, that's why you do that first. Okay, so for people who've actually been unlucky enough to contract the virus, are you making recommendations as to what they should do to get through it as best they can?
Yes. So there's two things I would say. Not only we're going to look these two things together, how to help as a cancer patient or any other person to try to keep it away. Of course, number one, I always say lower your deuterium levels. Why? Because if you lower your deuterium levels, that means you have a bigger margin of error, right? If you lower it, then even if COVID comes in, it can't do as much damage because your blood pressure system isn't as important. It doesn't have to work as hard to get that heavy water out because there's no heavy water there. Therefore, you can outlast it. The other thing that's important, even when you have, as you contract COVID, the virus, is to get up and move. To get up and move and do breathing exercises. And we developed several breathing exercises, or adapted several breathing exercises that help that. Mm-hmm. And essentially what you're trying to do is learn to expand your lungs. Because if you look at your lungs, are huge, and people just – and we've – in modern life, we don't use our lungs as well as we used to. We tend to breathe from our chest. But the majority of your lung capacity is below your rib cage. It's in your diaphragm. And so you need to learn how to breathe from your diaphragm, which will give you 30 to 40% more capacity of breathing. So we do exercises of learning how to breathe and then cough. Breathe and cough, because as you cough, that's going to make, think about the stuff in between, but this is the architecture in between your lungs that can check that to have the water, it forces that water out. So it's a cough when you're at the end of these breathing exercises. Mm. It is incredibly, incredibly effective. And again, even though you're tired, get up, roll over, stand up, and cough and do these breathing exercises. That's one. The other thing that we've been, I am old enough to have worked during the AIDS epidemic,
right.
Is what the AIDS scare. This is very, very similar to people just, they don't remember their history, and it's such a shame. This is very similar to what we went through during AIDS. And when we talk about as far as people not wanting to touch each other and all these other things. But more importantly, we understood one of the big things with AIDS was pneumonia. It was the same thing. It did the same thing. It wasn't as brutal or as effective at binding to receptors, and the receptors were on T cells, but it also binded to ACE2 receptors. But what we learned from that is we took and we developed a elixir or a supplement that was used for AIDS patients back then with a combination of what's called C60, which is a carbon nanoparticle, and a lot of other things to stop things that happen when you get COVID. So the cytokine storm, I'm an immunologist. What that means is that it's your immune system gearing up to kill something, gearing up to move something out. It's getting an entire police department or army revved up to kill the virus. But that revving up makes a lot of different things come out of all our immune cells. And the virus has used that. Viruses are amazingly smart to not have brains. They're amazingly smart. Right. And it's used that cytokine storm to actually help it grow. So what we've done is made a way to tap down that cytokine storm to keep your body's immune system focused on what it's supposed to do, but not misled, not thrown off the track by red herrings, but that the cytokine storm does. And it also blocks the virus because we've always worked on this. We hope your audience should understand that it's always been a belief that viruses were co-contaminants, if not the progenitors of cancer. And so we've always worked on that fact. And so we've always worked on ways to stop viruses from getting into cancer cells, because that's what makes them come back and changes them. So where we are, we understand this. And so we've this elixir, this that we've made, stops those viruses from from replicating once they've even got into a cell. The same way we stop viruses or cancer cells from replicating using this a form of this. And so it helps with all those things, all those enzymes in it that cuts up all of the mucus and things that go in your lungs. And we're using that. We really don't have a lot of it. And because, again, you know, it's hard to make, but we provide that to our patients. Anybody who has a respiratory problem, we provide it to them. And we provide it to frontline workers at a lot of hospitals across the country. Now, we're trying to get that through the FDA and clinical studies, and we're making no claims. All we can tell you is that it's made to do these things, to do those things that COVID is supposed to start. Is it effective? Well, anecdotally, we know we give it to any patient that's gone into respiratory arrest, and they've all come out of it. And it's been pretty amazing. And so we haven't lost anybody as of yet of all of our hundreds and hundreds of patients to COVID. For the most part, to cancer either, but to COVID. And so that's a very, very hopeful sign that it's very good. And it's something that's very easy to take. And it seems to be working. It's not a preventative, although I will say I do have an interesting story. We have one, the first patient that we had, that we provided this to, he and his wife, he decided that he was going. He took it as almost a preventative, so he started taking it, and we were like, "Why'd you do this?" And he said, "Well, I thought I was supposed to." So he took it, and then lo and behold, 3 weeks later, they were finally able to get a test. And when they took the antibody test, now it's an antibody test, it showed that both of them had been exposed to COVID. The incredible thing was, and he has a very serious cancer. The incredible thing was, after that incubation, 15 to 20 day incubation, his wife, who did not take it but was a very healthy person, developed the flu, felt kind of sick. You know, yet he, who developed it at the same time, didn't feel a thing. He's feeling better than ever. As far as the way things are going, he's riding 30-mile bike rides now. He's doing all these things, and his wife called and said she wasn't feeling good. And we went, aha, he took it serendipitously. You know, luckily, he took it exactly at the right time that he had it. He just didn't know. Again, we don't have enough testing, but we'll talk about testing too. So. Then we gave it to her, and the same thing. Within a day, her symptoms were gone. Her symptomology was gone. Her energy was back, and she was able now to compete with her husband again on bike riding. Mm. So that's my anecdotal stories.
Okay, and I mean, you know, this is not a drug. Is there any interest in such a thing? I mean, are you getting interest from outside of somebody who might actually want to test it properly?
Yes, we're actually trying to get into FDA trials right now. We have so many things going on. As a business, we're happy. As a business, we're also sad that we're happy, because we'd much rather COVID not be around and the world being put through this. But we're fortunate, and the world's fortunate, quite frankly, that we've done all this research so far that can help get rid of it, or at least help patients or people in general, especially our frontline workers too, in hospitals, in grocery stores, all of the people in agriculture, all the poor people besides the doctors that are being forced out to do work that is dangerous, and they're not being paid enough. They don't have proper insurance, so we're very happy that we may be able to help them too. So yes, we are going to have clinical trials on it. But in the meantime, just like DDW, we've done plenty of clinical trials. We've done plenty of clinical trials, successful clinical trials. When I say plenty, three successful clinical trials. Yet we're not a drug yet. But I'm going to tell everybody, don't worry about it being a drug. It's effective. It's effective on making you feel better, giving you more energy. Therefore, it's effective on everything you need. And same thing with the supplement that we've made, and I'm going to call a supplement, is because it does what it's supposed to. It's made for what should ail you. And anecdotally, so far, it is working. And we're getting a lot of response to it. We can't make enough of it. Of course you can't. But we're very, very, when people want it, they've got to show us that they have, that they're positive, or they're in a hospital having respiratory problems, because it's precious, and we don't have enough for everybody, but we will make as much as we can, but we get it to the people that need it.
Okay. So, I'd like to bring it back round towards cancer again. Last time we spoke, we spent a lot of time talking about the principles behind deuterium depletion, but we weren't left with that much time at the end of the show to look at the actual methods that you use to achieve this. So could you just give us an overview of the strategies that are included in your protocols?
Sure. I would like to actually transition from there to this and to talk about COVID receptors and cancer. And this is important, and then we'll talk about that.
Okay.
So when we think about cancer, and the reason this is so important is because we know for a fact that better outcomes in most cancer has to do if you have the more ACE2 receptors you have on a cancer, when you have cancer, the better your outcome is. Now listen to what I said. The people that do better, the people that survive, the people that have long remissions are those people that have the highest levels of ACE2 receptors on their cells. Mm-hmm. So this is important, because what you're hearing from that is that the people that have the highest amount need them. So when COVID goes in and connects to a cancer cell, it lowers your chances of surviving cancers formidably. And where we see these things in cancer cells, so renal cell, any renal cell cancers, colorectal cancers, liver cancer, stomach cancer, urethral cancer, as I said before, testes cancers. We also see in gliomas and thyroid cancer, colorectal cancers. I've already said that. I mean, so this is important. So all of those cancers in particular, again, I think it's important for any kind of cancers, but particularly for the ones that are the major cancers, breast cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer, they are the people that are the biggest targets for COVID. They are the people that have to make sure they protect themselves most. Mm. Because as those receptors go down, every paper that's been published over the last 5 years shows that your prognosis gets worse. So that's the important connection for cancer patients. Now, we think have a way around that, again, with its deuterium depletion, because it not only allows you to protect yourself, but it also protects those ACE2 receptors to where they stay high and gives you that margin for error. Hmm. So that's that part. Now, okay. Ask your question again.
Yeah, well, back to the question. Yeah, an overview of the strategies you actually employ to, you know, if you have somebody comes to you with a cancer diagnosis, what are the things at your disposal?
Yes, so we believe in the deuterium depletion. The biggest thing it can do, the most important thing we think it does, yes, it works on its own to help people. But in late-stage cancers, what it does, more importantly than anything else, it makes standard of care work better. So it makes your chemo and radiation and immunotherapy, it makes all those things work better. We've published papers. A lot of other people have published papers about that. So, and that's an important thing, because not only does it make those more effective, but it also gives you less side effects. So you're healthier, you're happier. When you're taking chemo and radiation, a lot of our patients end up saying, you know, I go to work every day. I don't look like people say, well, you don't look like you have cancer. And they said, I don't know if I should take that as a compliment or insult, but they take it. So we believe in a 360-degree approach to deuterium depletion. So what does that mean? Yes, we use deuterium depleted water. Deuterium depleted water is a special water that is made. We make it in a GMP facility, which means it's of drug grade. A GMP facility that makes this water, and it lowers your deuterium levels simply by drinking it, and you're diluting out bad. So you're just diluting it out. But in addition, we change your diet to where, and every diet's always important, because the way deuterium really comes in your body, in addition to drinking it in regular water, it really is in the foods you eat. And certain foods have high levels of deuterium. And when you're sick, when you have a disease, or we want you to eat a therapeutic diet, we're not talking about a lifestyle, but a therapeutic diet that is free or reduced in deuterium. So that's when people heard about a ketogenic diet. I'm one of the people that helped really make the ketogenic diet what it is today. But a ketogenic diet, when properly made, is simply a deuterium depleted diet, because the foods that you're eating, if it's a grass-fed animal, it's a deuterium depleted animal, because the cow or the pigs ate grass and grub worms and all these things which are deuterium depleted. So we work on diet. We also work on what I talked about before, breathing, the proper way to breathe. Breathing is very important when you're a cancer patient, for the same reason we talked about it was when you're a COVID patient, or, you know, why it would protect you in COVID, because those receptors on your lungs are important. And so we give you breathing exercises and teach you how to breathe through your diaphragm, teach you how to breathe. Most people who have cancer almost all of them, they can only, we call something a controlled pause, which is their ability to hold your breath after you exhale, hold your breath comfortably. People with cancer can only do this 12 to 15 seconds. That's it. Some only 2 or 3 seconds. That's all you can hold your breath. That's a measure of how much oxygen is in your tissue. If you don't have oxygen in your tissue, that allows things to grow. Cancer cells, bacteria, viruses all flourish in a oxygen low environment. Why? Because if you don't have oxygen, oxygen can't combine to hydrogen to make water. And oxygen binds to deuterium more than it binds to hydrogen. Imagine it likes it better. If it's going to go out on a date, it wants to date deuterium. I guess that's the way you could think about it. Mm-hmm. And when it binds to that deuterium in that cancer cell or in the it removes the heavy water out, and that's how your body gets rid of it. Again, using blood pressure, it's renin angiotensin system. So it's very, very important. So we teach you how to breathe. We also have the right type of exercise. Every idiot on the planet knows exercise is important. But we know, we've developed through our research what exercises, the difference between exercises and work. So right. There's a way to exercise properly to make yourself healthy. So we go through that. We also look at the gut, because I've told you how important the gut is. But we look at the gut, and it's not all this stuff that you read. Although this stuff is great, it's not that we talk about taking probiotics and prebiotics. We understand how to make the gut work to remove deuterium. So we do that. And another important part that people often get is the emotional side of things. So we provide a lot of the emotional support to understand and change the way you think about things. And I know people say think positively, but it is sort of true. But it's the, we call it our Think Right module. And what we do there is to fix the way you think to where it makes you more positive. It makes you more, it changes your body to where your body believes it's going to work. And therefore, it does help. It actually does help. The power of positive thought, the power of prayer is real. We just added science to it to make it predictable and reproducible. And the last but not least is sleep. Sleep is the time at which you do everything. I want to understand everybody to understand this. Sleep is the most important part of your day. This is why you do so much of it, why you sleep at least 8 hours, at least a third of the time. A third of your day is spent sleeping, because when you're sleeping, that's when your body repairs itself. That's when your immune system really works to kill cancer cells. And more importantly, that's when your body gets rid of deuterium, is when you sleep. Think about this. When you sleep, you go to sleep, and when you wake up, the first thing you have to do is go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's to dump all this deuterium. It might sound silly, but it's what it's for. And you also have periods during your sleep called deep sleep and REM sleep, which is where your body is getting rid of carbohydrates and getting rid of deuterium. And it gets rid of these big, there's a science word for it, but let's think of it as big garbage bags. It gets rid of these garbage bags of deuterium that is collected all day. If you don't sleep, those garbage bags get so filled up that they burst and release deuterium back out to the system, and they're in immediate proximity to those nanomotors, those motors we talked about. So as soon as they even start leaking, it breaks those nanomotors. So sleep, we work with sleep to make sure you get a good sleep, and more importantly, a healthful sleep, because it's not the length of time you sleep, it's the quality of time, it's the quality you get during sleep that's important.
Okay, so one question is, are these recommendations you make to all cancer patients the same, or there's a million variables at play between types of cancer, stages, aggressiveness, the deuterium levels they have? You know, what do you prescribe different protocols?
Yes, thank you, Robin. That's a fantastic question. And yes, we believe that the goal may be to turn depletion, but there's a million ways to, you know, as they say, there's a million roads to Rome. And so one of the things we pride ourselves in is that we have a database that has thousands of people in it already. And that database is able to show us outcomes of what people have had, outcomes of people with cancer, with different diseases, healthy people, athletes, over the last 10 years, and those are taken from papers that are already published too. So when a person comes in, they go through what we call our private health detective, and it goes through and it figures out using a lot of algorithms what the right modules are for you. So different cancer patients or different patients, period, get different modules. Maybe you already sleep well. We give you a test for that. Maybe you already breathe well. We'll give you a test for that. Maybe you already eat well. We'll give you a test for that. So we only ask you to do the things you need to do. Mm-hmm. And then we go back and we test continually mm-hmm. if it's fixing the systems it's supposed to fix. Is your sleep now working? Is your breathing now working? Are you happier? Are you more? Is everything working better? And then we can, because you have your own portal, you have it in your algorithms and all the data is used all the time, we can get that more tuned in and dialed in, especially for you, because as Robin said so well, one pancreatic cancer patient or one breast cancer patient is completely different from another breast cancer patient. Even though it's the same disease, they've lived different experiences, they have different cultures, they have different needs. And so we really specify using science on what should happen and when it should happen. So you may even use the same modules, but you'll use them differently for different times in a different sequence. We like to say we do four things. We try to make a person more physically, not try, we make people more physically resilient, emotionally resilient, cognitively resilient, and socially resilient. That's our whole goal. And so doing that means that we have got to be able to give the patient or the people that come to us a set of tools that recognize, giving them the right tool, then the right how to use a combination of tools together. Then we try to inspire them and keep them motivated to use those tools correctly. And finally, and just as importantly, we then give them a whole suite of ways to find out if those tools are working the way they're supposed to, and if not, what they can do to make them work, or what they can do to make them work better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand. Right, so look, not much time left. Just tell me one thing. How much deuterium-depleted water do you recommend people drink a day?
Well, when we go, again, that's different for different sizes and for different things. And so that's one of the things we do very well of trying to make your protocol. It's going to actually tell you how much water you're going to drink and when it comes to deuterium depleted water. However, for the average consumer, you can end up eating right, doing all the right things, you should probably be drinking anywhere. You can drink anywhere from 1 to 2 liters of water a day. But I would suggest that you find waters that have lower amounts of deuterium in the 135 to 100, about the 135 parts per million a range. And there's not a lot of them out there. Most waters that really, most bottled waters come from tap water. You know, it's the same thing you drink in your city, which means it comes from rivers. And that water is about 151 parts per million. I know that doesn't sound like a lot of difference between 140, 141, or 145 and 135. It doesn't sound like a lot. But when you consider you literally have billions of hydrogens in your body, it's a ton. It's, you know, it's a circus full of elephants amount. And so it is very, very important. But for the average person, drink less water and also try to find waters that have lower deuterium amounts. And I know what you're going to ask, which ones have it? And I'm going to say right now what we'll say. The easiest thing to think about is try to drink water from higher altitudes because the deuterium levels are lowest at higher altitudes, and they're also lowest at toward the North Pole and the South Poles. So drinking water that's closer to the poles and from a higher place is much better than drinking water that is at the equator. For instance, we did a study in Australia where we had about 150 to 300 samples taken all across Australia, which of course is on the equator, and their water was horrible. Their deuterium levels were high every place, and they asked what they. But people are made now. At the same time, people are made to be. If you eat right, eat locally, do all the things you're supposed to do, your body's made to handle those deuterium levels. Right. But they asked me, I want to make sure people understand that the deuterium is not the devil. It's not at all. It just needs to be controlled. But in Australia, again, it's very high across the country. And when I was asked about the study and asked, well, what are they supposed to do and how can they do it, I told them to move because it wasn't made for the people that are there. Yeah. It wasn't made for the Aboriginals at the deuterium level, which is, I was making tongue, it was really a joke, but that is true. The deuterium levels for the Aboriginals is not a problem because that deuterium levels was made for the peoples that continent had. Hmm. And so you can't come into a continent and not change your eating habits, still have the English eating habits in Australia with bad water and not see disease.
Right.
So.
Okay. Look, we're going to have to end it there. Just as last time, there's a ton of things we didn't talk about. I've got plenty more to ask you about. But anyway, we've definitely got a show full. So thanks very much again for your time, Dr. Q.
Well, thank you, Robin. I really appreciate this. I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate what you do for people, because it's so important to connect people, give them hope, and to understand they have a family, especially when you have cancer.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I hope you'll excuse the authentic LA police siren that got in there at one point. I mentioned the previous interview I did with Dr. Q. If you'd like to hear it, just go to ukhealthradio.com and type heavy hydrogen into the search box. A reminder that if you're someone with cancer, or a relative or carer for someone with cancer, Yes to Life has just launched a new website aimed at supporting you, wigwam.org.uk. If you're interested in what you see, you can sign up to be kept informed of the current program of online forums with a range of experts from the world of integrative medicine, and also get the option of joining or even setting up a local wigwam group near you, a place to give and receive support and to explore integrative medicine approaches to cancer. Thanks so much for listening today. I'll be back again next week with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Bye.